Cornelina is an imaginary place in the west of Ireland that will be brought to life through music, film, spoken word and stories from Kevin Barry and David Kitt. The project will also involve a cast of collaborators that will slowly piece together the inhabitants and mood of this strange town. It's part of the Music Town Festival and I'm delighted to be joined by its creators. At least one of them is with me at the moment, Kevin Barry. Kevin, what kind of a place is Cornelina? Are you making it up as you go along, which is the way you should be, I guess?
Absolutely not making anything up with this project, Sean. Cornelina, I'd say if I was to describe it in a single word, I'd say it's rattled. it's quite a rattled place. It's dealing with all those traditional West of Ireland botherations like the wind and the rain and the melancholy in the fields and in the dry stone walls and all of that. So in the way that would be familiar from anyone who loves and goes to the West of Ireland a lot, it's quite a rattle, quite a shook kind of a place, I would say.
I love the sound of it already. the name of it, Cornelina, did you go off looking for a place name that might have a little bit of history attached to it linguistically?
Well, you know what? We were trying to find the name that was right and that doesn't already exist and that isn't too close to anything else. So I guess it was coming out of words like Connemara or Cornemona and places like that. And similar to a place like Connemara, actually, there's always the kind of question, where does it start and where does it begin and where does it end? And that's the way with Cornelina as well, I think. Its geography is quite vague. I'll put it that way.
Well, again, I love this. I must go off looking up what Lena might mean at the end of a place name. Cor is a type of a twist or a turn, isn't it? Cor and the Lena, so whatever.
Very suitably, yes.
Whatever that is. And David Kitt is with us now as well. Where did this whole idea for Cor and Lena and this project begin, David?
You know, straight in. Hi, Sean again. It kind of started, I was working with Mary Hickson, who used to run the Opera House in Cork, and she had this event, Sounds from a Safe Harbour in Cork, and we were talking about possible collaborators, and I told her I was a big fan of Kevin's work, and maybe we could approach him, and she knows Kevin and had his contact details, so she introduced the two of us, and it kind of just grew from there, really. It was really a kind of the idea was really an ensemble piece eventually, but we had to find a way to kind of set up the situation, I guess, you know.
And when you say an ensemble piece, David, you're speaking about obviously you coming from the musical side, from the music side of things, and Kevin coming from the literary side of things. What other collaborators did you want to bring in? And what, well, I suppose, rather than a big long list of names, were there other art forms that you wanted to be part of this expression?
Yeah, to be honest, initially it was probably wildly, the ambition of it initially was probably a bit too large in scale, and it was going to be, I guess, you know, a stage show with set designers and potentially kind of maybe dance and Kevin, myself involved, obviously, but it took a while to settle on the format, and it kind of, I guess everyone else disappeared except for me and Kevin after a while. And after a couple of failed funding attempts and filling out forms and all that carry on. But then it basically just was resurrected for this Music Town iteration by Leeds O'Toole. He got in touch. I'd sent him some of the work that we've been doing. So it was a case of something that kind of started 2 years ago and, you know, had all that time to kind of distill, I suppose. Reaching a point where it had 6 weeks to be made in a hurry, and we needed to. So, you know, some of the people that I'd approached before, Jennifer Walsh, who's a friend of Kevin's, and someone I'd met a couple of times, and an artist I really admire, and people like Katie Kim, Johnny Dillon, who works in the Folklore Archive. He was, you know, we have access to the Folklore Archive for the film and the music, so it's, it was that kind of sense of urgency probably gives it an energy that, I think really works, actually.
Yeah, nothing like a deadline to get you to be a bit rattled yourself, Kevin, as well as Cornelina being a place that's rattled. But how important is that cinematic or that filmic side to the whole thing, Kevin?
Yeah, I mean, one of the first things that David and I started to do was just kind of swap emails and text messages about kind of favorite films and favorite soundtracks and things like that, trying to get a feel for what the texture of this kind of place would be like. And like, we talked a lot about sort of US 70s films, things like Terrence Malick, Days of Heaven and Badlands and movies like that, and things like Paris, Texas and the soundtracks there. So it always had a kind of a cinematic feeling to us, regardless of what kind of iteration the project might take down the line. So it's we're kind of the same generation, David and I, so a lot of the foundational influences are similar. Yeah. You know, we'd be into a lot of the same kind of music and films and stuff. But it was all the kind of slowly building up a texture for this place. And this is a really nice way to give a first kind of taste of it with a kind of a video presentation.
Interestingly enough, David mentioned a stage show there, and I've accused you on many occasions, Kevin Parry, of being a great actor because of the way you write your characters and the way you read your own work. You're giving us a large portion of the voices, I think, within this town, are you?
I'm channeling is what I'm doing here, Sean. I'm channeling certain characters who are out in this place, Cornelina. It's a kind of a psychic process, something like Lady Gregory used to get up to with the seances back in the day. It's just kind of trying to tune into these characters who are knocking around Cornelina and seeing what they're saying.
Who's talking to me about the hair in this clip that I'm about to play, and why is he talking to me about the hair?
He's we talked to this fella a lot. He's slightly rattled, slightly shook, gentleman of a certain age, but he's tuned into quite interesting frequencies on the Cornelina air, I think.
Let's have a listen to him.
Oh, look, I'd be worried that I'd be thinking not only the dark old stuff that happens in Cornelina, but I have had amazing things happen to me out here as well. Just up that boreen there, one day, I must be 20 years ago, and I don't know, was I sick after a night below in the queer place or whatever. I was just kind of sat up there, thrown up against that stone wall, and I suppose I was half asleep, kind of complete, like a statue, and I opened my eyes, and not 3 feet from me, there was a hare stood up on its hind legs. I don't know if you ever saw a hare close. Like, you'd know it wasn't a rabbit now. Long, stringy kind of a fella, you know, and he couldn't see me, and he was just sniffing at the air. And just the eyes, you know. The eyes seemed to be seen into some other world. That we wouldn't have any way into it. And at the end, I must have coughed or moved or something, because it took off. And the beat of its run across the hill there, you know, the hollows. It sounded. It was as if. I don't know how to say it, but it was as if the hill always wanted to make that sound, that it was always stored for it. And it was just waiting for the hare to come along and beat it out.
So there's a little section of Cornelina the Hare. What I just adored in that, we'll come back to the hare in a second, but David, I'm presuming that you were responding to the words that Kevin, did Kevin give you that word, those words first? And that bit where he talks about the beat of its run and then the music starts to, you know, pick up on that beat. Was it music responding to words?
It was, yeah, it was. And funnily enough, I often imagined Ronan as nothing coming in on the baron there. We didn't get around to that quite yet, but I did my best to approximate that kind of sound, you know, heartbeat, kind of baron kind of beat. It was. I mean, that was, you know, I mean, a lot of the time Kevin just came in and would have had stuff in his head, but was kind of just doing it kind of more or less improvised into the mic and that was one of many. I mean, I have probably have 2 hours of Kevin.
Yeah, well, now he'd tell you, he'd say he wasn't improvising. He'd be telling you he was channeling.
Now, channeling, exactly.
That's what he was doing, David. He was channeling there now. Let's get the terms right. But the hare, Kevin, it has that kind of mystical, mythical, magical quality to it. It's a wonderful animal in terms of it's the sort of place that, to me, it strikes me that you're trying to create here.
It shows up a lot in Irish folklore, actually, the hare as a creature, and it's usually a bad augury. But there, are, as we know, there aren't many good auguries in Irish folklore. You know? So it's always usually bleak old stuff. But this gentleman we heard from is wouldn't be thrown too much by this. You know, he'd be tuned into what's going on around the place in terms of the hares and whatnot. I like the line that you'd know it's not a rabbit. You know, that's
absolutely
very, very significant.
No, well, there's a big difference now. There's a big difference between the hare and the rabbit. I had an experience 2 Easters ago when you could travel down the country, driving into a place in Leitrim just before Easter, and there were 2 children in the car to whom he said, "Oh, the Easter bunny might be here." And then this hare ran across in front of us. So for that moment in time, the hare was the Easter bunny.
They have a bit of a spooky feel to them.
Oh,
yeah.
They do, for sure. David, I think that you were thinking along the lines of David Lynch here and a Twin Peaks with an Irish mentality. What a place that would be.
Yeah, well, we did. We talked about Twin Peaks, particularly the last series of Twin Peaks, you know, which the sound design and just, I mean, you know, David Lynch has talked a lot over the years about, you know, he makes moving paintings with sound, you know, and that's definitely, there's one particular piece in the film. It's one about a dead Esso station that Kevin did, and the music and the film and Kevin's words together, it's definitely influenced by that kind of David Lynch sound design kind of stuff, but it really works. The work that Frank Sweeney and Colleen have done with the film is just really brilliant.
And Frank and Colleen are the cinematographers. They're giving us the film aspect of this.
Yeah.
How realistic, I suppose, or how abstract or how surrealistic is the kind of images that you'll be giving to us, Kevin?
Yeah, well, I mean, our kind of starting point with Cornelina from the off really was that it should kind of reflect or refract a real Irish place, you know, that it should feel like a place that could conceivably exist kind of just outside your 5K, you know.
Well, outside your 10K from today, or outside your own county, more than 20K.
Oh, well, I forgot that our counties are our oyster as of today. It's kind of just over the next hill, so, you know, it should feel kind of strange but familiar, if that makes any sense as you go around there. We wanted that reflected in the images and the sound and so forth as well.
Yeah, you also mentioned this idea that there's a touch of Dylan Thomas and Under Milkwood off it, or even a kind of Brian Friel's Ballybeg, but it sounds more of a, again, to use your term, Kevin, it sounds more of a rattled place than Ballybeg.
Very possibly, yeah, but it's just, I love that idea of literally doing little world building projects where you take real life and real places and real people and try to make a kind of a fictionalized version of them, and you can get away with more when you're fictionalizing, you know.
and the what strikes me on this, David, is obviously the deadline of the Music Town Festival and having to have it ready for Friday night has put certain skids underneath you. But this is something that could grow and continue to grow into a bigger project. Is that the plan and the hope?
I really hope it does. It's something that was, like, there were great, massive ambitions at the start, and I have had a lot of conversations with people over the last 2 years, you know, within the art world. And I think ideally for me it would be a gallery piece, you know, kind of multimedia gallery piece, with possibly, you know, performances within the run in a gallery or something like that. You know, I think that would be an amazing outcome. But it definitely has legs. Everyone involved is really excited about it.
Yeah, and
has responded really well, and I've been talking to a couple of people who didn't make the deadline. So, yeah, it feels to me like there's legs, and it's just been fun. You know, it hasn't. You know, there's been a lot of work has gone in, but it's always felt quite inspired and charged. And yeah, so it's been great so far.
So far, so good. I'm going to finish up, Kevin, by listening to another piece, and this is a little section called Frankie Floats. I don't know if I need to know anything about Frankie other than he does lots of things he possibly shouldn't be at, particularly with the car.
Yeah, well, he introduces us to one of the interesting idiosyncrasies of Cornelina, which is it's big into flotation tanks. There's a lot of flotation tanks in this part of the country.
I'd love to know where Cornelina is. We'll all be heading down there immediately. Listen, great to speak with you both this evening, and looking forward to seeing what's realised on Friday evening. David Kitt and Kevin Barry, thanks for being with us, lads.
Cheers, Sean. Thanks.
And let's finish up with Frankie and set him off floating in this further little section from Cornelina.
It's great to be in a car again, you know. I was telling you that. I was put off the road. That was coming a long time, you know. And they were as right to take the course of action that they took. But it's great to be great to have the wheels now again, you know, under me. And see this house now. On your right up there, that was Frankie's house. God rest him. And he was Frankie Floats, we used to call him. He had the garage built on out the side, and he put a flotation tank into it. And it was one of the first of the tanks, I'd say, now out around here. There's a few now at this stage. But Frankie, you were only supposed to go into that tank for an hour at a time, and I suppose he got kind of attached to it, you know. He told me he went in there one time, he was 14 hours in the flotation tank up outside Cornelina, and by the end of it wasn't so much that he thought he could see his dead mother again, you know, in the tank with him. It was that he thought he was his mother in the tank. Of it, and it was a while after we were trying to persuade him otherwise, you know.
Lovely. Another section from Cornelina, that project involving David Kitt and Kevin Barry, who were speaking to us just before you heard that piece. Cornelina will be available on musictown.ie. It's part of that festival, and it will be there from this Friday, April the 16th. It will be there from 9 p.m.